Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to be talking about remodeling your home today to make it, maybe to make it easier to stay in as you age. And tell you what, though, these changes aren't necessarily for just older folks. They can work quite well for any of us, and we'll be talking about that today with a couple of people. Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Design Build. Chad, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
And as well, we have with us Sam Breidenbach. Sam is the president of TDS Custom Construction in Madison, one of the companies that specializes in universal design. He does a lot of things, but his specialty is universal design. And Sam, it's great to have you with us as well. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Good to be here, Larry.
Well, we have lots of things that we can talk about, but first, let's talk about TDS for a minute, because you were on a long time ago, and tell us about TDS Custom Construction.
Well, we've been in business for about 33 years now, and we have a great staff of designers and carpenters. We specialize in generally old house remodeling, and we're getting into a little bit of new homes now. But universal design is really front and center in our design process. And we always, when we're designing projects, we really like to be able to look forward into the future for our clients and make sure that whatever we're doing is going to be a house or a project that they can live in sort of indefinitely.
Yeah. So how do you define universal design? Is there a definition or kind of, there's certainly an overall concept behind it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are really like seven principles that are typically, where that were established back in the 90s after the ADA was implemented by I think it was George Bush, the senior. Mm-hmm. And basically those are things that center around equity, where the anybody really can use the move around the house and be able to use it in their own capacity.
Sure.
Flexibility. Things need to be simple and intuitive. The items that are in the design really need to minimize any dangers or hazards.
Makes a lot of sense. And just to take maybe a simple or maybe not so simple example, Lisa on Facebook says she's always shocked when she sees new construction that doesn't have a single entrance that's accessible to people with limited mobility, or when watching TV remodeling shows that put a mother-in-law suite on the second story. Right. Does it comment on that, Chad Spade?
Sure. Well, I mean, that's a great example of the importance of thinking about these things, because I know, Sam and I both deal with this. We talk about how it's helpful to people of all ages. If you break a leg, you've got to still live in your home.
Yeah.
You can find yourself temporarily incapacitated, and be in a wheelchair or just having crutches. And so it could be a temporary condition or it could be a long-term condition. And if the home you live in now was not designed to facilitate or accommodate that, then you're going to end up having to invest quite a lot into making it accessible. So it's something that, frankly, a lot of people aren't thinking about. So as Sam said, it's our job to ask those questions. And let's face it, no one wants to trip on the threshold into their tub or their shower. No one wants to trip coming in and out of a door. We all can trip in many typical construction scenarios. So is the builder thinking about that and helping the homeowner to make those sorts of adjustments. And a lot of the doors we put in can have low or no threshold entries.
Yeah.
So it's those sorts of things. And then, you know, Sam alluded to the ADA requirements that started to be implemented in 92. You know, initially it was just making doors wider, but then, you know, a lot of other issues were obviously good things to be addressing.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about when you mentioned doors and entryways. I can remember tripping as I was coming into a house, and the little bump that was there was practically, I mean, it was like a quarter inch or something, and I still managed to trip on it. Do you get that once in a while, Sam, from people?
Well,
maybe
yeah.
Not from that bad, but
yeah, definitely. I mean, I think one of the biggest limitations in implementing any sort of the principles of universal design in a remodeling project is that, you know, houses that were built back in the 20s really just weren't designed for any kind of mobility. So it does get challenging to eliminate a lot of those hazards, but it's one of those things that if you're in design with a remodeling contractor, you should really be asking him or her to think about, you know, what they can do to improve those things, even if it's simply just remodeling a bathroom. Are there things that they can do that's out of the ordinary, which can help their mobility for the future?
Yeah, it's interesting. And I was thinking about, well, even young people may say, well, what, we don't really need to worry about that. But Vivian called in from Green Bay to say that another temporary event from that would benefit from universal design is from those young people who have pregnancies. You know, you've got a pregnancy or maybe even a complicated pregnancy.
Sure.
Something you don't anticipate, but something to think about.
Yeah. So if someone is bedridden temporarily, there are, so for instance, if you're remodeling, let's say you want an office in your house, and there's a half bathroom that's maybe right around the corner. Sometimes to really be forward thinking, you might remodel the half bath to include a shower that then is an part of an ensuite with that office that can do double duty as a future bedroom or even a temporary bedroom.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Have you got, Chad, can you give us an example perhaps from your experience where there was a specific remodel that took into account an aspect of universal design?
Sure. I would say the most common scenario that we explore for a significant number of clients is having a first floor future bedroom. That's basically what Sam was just alluding to. And so sometimes it's the mother-in-law suite that the, you know, one of our listeners had alluded to. And, you know, why would you put something like that on the second floor? It doesn't make sense. You'd want it on the first floor typically. But that's the most common thing. When we look at adding a master suite, we are often putting that suite on the more accessible floor of the home, and the kids' bedrooms are left upstairs. And so it's not always done, but when you start to ask the questions at the front end, it often becomes very appealing because long term, people realize they may want to end up staying in that home well into retirement, and wouldn't it be nice to be able to stay on the main floor? Or if you find yourself in a pinch and you need it temporarily, then you have it. So
yeah, I was thinking about this show last weekend, actually. I was out doing my little 3-mile jog in another city, and there happened to be an open house at a home that was too expensive for me. But I thought, you know what, I'm just going to stop and take a look at the home. And it was a, you know, over $1 million home. And the bedrooms were on the third floor and the basement. So there were no bedrooms, or on the second floor in the basement, there were no bedrooms or even a spot for a bedroom that I could see without some pretty extensive remodeling on that first floor. It was, I thought, well, thinking about this, other than financial reasons, this might not be a house for some people.
Sure.
You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Twitter page at Larry L. Mealer Show. Or on Facebook. Love to hear from you. We will take some calls. By the way, I think you alluded to that. It can be, or maybe it was you, Chad, that said it could be an expensive proposition if you're going to get into this. But does it have to be expensive to remodel along the style? I mean, any more expensive than traditional? Or maybe I just misheard you.
Well, no, I would say it's always the case. The devil's in the details, and the level of the finishes will determine the cost of a project. But there are many features that are consistent with the principles of universal design that don't really add any substantial cost to the typical scope of a job. So, for example, if you are remodeling a bathroom, there are a lot of ways to create a low or no threshold shower. Some of them are expensive and some of them are quite cost effective. So the budget will determine which way you go, but the feature can be built into that project. Now, you know, a lot of times you widen a door into a bathroom with this in mind. Sometimes you're required to do it. Often we do it just because the client has decided it's a prudent thing to do at this moment. You know, little things like that certainly add cost relative to not doing it at all. But it's a lot easier to widen a door when you're renovating a room than it is to come back later and have to widen the door.
For sure.
Yeah.
Another issue, Diana in Middleton wanted to remind listeners that codes, especially on lakefront property, may not allow for some of the modifications that might relate to universal design. And I know you guys have both worked on lakefront homes. Sam, has that been an issue much for you that you can think of?
No, excuse me. No, it really hasn't. And I also want to just say that there are really very, very simple things that you can do to improve the accessibility and the mobility within a home. Very simple things like lever handles versus knobs on a door, U-shaped handles on cabinetry, handlebars or grab bars at toilets and showers, non-slip flooring, using visual cues to differentiate between, you know, different level changes, especially at stairs. So there's lots of different things that you can do that really don't have any budgetary impact at all. Regarding the lakefront property, I think that sometimes really depending upon the lay of the land for that individual property, the biggest challenge really is getting from grade to your front door or some door in a way in which isn't hazardous or challenging. And sometimes lakefront properties can be built on, you know, slope properties. But I've never run into any code issues relative to that.
You haven't been able to overcome one way or another. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Sam Breidenbach is president of TDS Custom Construction in Madison, talking with them about home improvement, zeroing in a bit today on universal design. I'm Larry Mealer. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement with universal design in mind today to kind of help make things easier as you age. And you know what? Even if you, if you're not aging, a lot of the design principles our two guests are talking about today are worth it, no matter what age or what stage of ability or disability you may be in. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Sam Breidenbach of TDS Custom Construction in Madison, our guest. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Dawn in Toma now. Dawn, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Larry.
Sure.
We have two bathrooms on the main floor of our walkout ranch that are small. If we would combine those into one larger accessible bathroom, do you know if that would affect the value of our home positively or negatively? One of them is the ensuite for the master.
Okay.
And then we have one large bathroom in the lower level of our finished basement.
Hi, Dawn. Thanks for calling. Well, typically the value of a home utilizes, you know, the more bedrooms you have, the more bathrooms you have increases the value. But how long do you intend to stay in the house?
Well, I think this would be the house that we would probably stay in as we retire. We have four kids, three teenagers, one's already in college. But as they're, but because the house is a walkout ranch, we have three bedrooms on the main floor. But the two bathrooms, like I said, are very small.
Yeah.
So we've talked a few times. We've brought up the idea of turning those two small bathrooms into one large bathroom. But where my husband and I differ on this is I think it would decrease the value of the home. But
right.
He seems to think it would, you know, increase the value or be fine.
Well, I think it's always whenever analyzing the value of a home, it's really important to factor in really the how long you intend to stay there. And it sounds like you're going to stay there sort of indefinitely. So the value to you and your family of an improved bathroom that allows you to, you know, age into the home gracefully is a very significant aspect to evaluating the value of a home.
Well, yeah. Thank you. That's great. That's great to hear.
All right. Appreciate your call. It's a kind of the questioning process I imagine you guys go through with homeowners.
Absolutely. Yeah, almost every project comes down to what is the value for you, the homeowner, and are you doing it for the long haul for yourself, in which case, really, the value of the home is, as Sam said, just it doesn't matter that much. I mean, certainly you wouldn't want to do things often that are really unusual.
Yeah.
But in the case of a bathroom like this, you know, you could still leave two doors going into that bathroom if you wanted to have access from the master and access from the hallway. It's not traditional, but it's certainly doable. And if again, if it's your home and you're living there, you can make decisions like that.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of ways to.
A lot of ways
assess.
To do it. And two doors might make perfect sense for them. Wendy in Green Bay, let's go to you next. Hi, Wendy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Larry, I adore you.
Thanks, Wendy.
I wanted to say that I have a friend. I'm disabled, but I can walk, and I love art and architecture. So I notice things, and I also watch a lot of HGTV, and I noticed that in your bigger cities, you know, where space is at a prime price, that they're building a lot of townhomes that are three and four stories high. And my brother was in one in Chicago, and there was no bathroom on your first floor in a lot of these. And also, you know, lots of stairs come with it. And like you guys have talked about, I've always wondered, what are they going to do if somebody has broke a leg or there is a temporary situation or a situation where somebody does, God forbid, have an accident, they're in a wheelchair, and now your home isn't workable.
Yeah.
And I've talked to my brother about this, and I think a lot of people assume it would never be them. And I'm always amazed at how many stairs are in a townhome. And even for somebody that isn't disabled, the laundry that you're carrying or the groceries that you're carrying, and there just isn't a lot of thought from builders and buyers, especially when they're young, and even like strollers coming in, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I've noticed is that when somebody does get sick, it is so beneficial to have a first floor bathroom with like maybe one bathroom with a walk-in shower and no bathtub. And so at least you have something that's usable for your own home or for the mother and father that maybe are retired and want to come stay. A lot of people tend to think that they'll put them in the basement, you know, a finished basement. But that, again, includes stairs.
Yeah. Well, you raise a number of issues. You know, as you were talking, Wendy, I was thinking about a good friend of mine who bought a townhouse here in Madison for herself and her two children. And in her case, the house came with an elevator. And the elevator, she's got a basement, a first floor, a second floor, and a third floor. And the elevator goes all the way to the basement, the drive-in basement. And she's found that when she comes home with a whole bags full of groceries, they go in the elevator rather than carrying them up the stairs. And for, you know, getting from one floor to another, if need be, they can use that elevator. And I don't know how common that is anymore. That happens to be here in Madison, but...
Yeah, elevators are still not typical in many single family structures, but we have looked at putting in elevators on a couple of projects. We've put in what are called dumbwaiters, which are, you know, just a small kind of elevator for things like groceries, to move them. And that's a very helpful thing that can be more easily installed because it has a much smaller footprint in the house.
Yeah.
You can find space for it.
This was already there and part of the purchase price built in and so forth, but they find that it's pretty useful in certain situations for them. What about her other comments of, for example, a walk-in shower is in place of a bath, let's say? Sam, you want to talk about that?
Sure. So you can typically take out a bathroom or a bathtub, and put in a walk-in shower. It will take up a little bit more real estate in the bathroom. Typically, a shower is going to be 36 by 60 would be ideal. Bathtubs are generally 32 by 60. Ideally, for a really accessible shower unit, we like to see maybe 42 by 60. creating a curbless system can be done. It takes a little bit of framing modification depending upon the age of the home. It's a really good idea.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for your comments, Wendy. I really appreciate it and stay listening. I'm sure there are going to be more ideas and thoughts coming up as we move along here. Steele in Appleton up next. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, in 1983, my mother moved back to Appleton where she was raised. And she got a condo, second floor, and maybe around 2005 or so, she was losing her ambulatory functions. And so she bought a unit on the first floor that came up for sale. And so as things went along, she really couldn't walk anymore and lost a leg, so she got a power chair. And I have to say, I don't know if it was Menards or one of the big places, but when she first went to the nursing home, she wanted to go home for Christmas, and so I went to him and I said, I need to get something so Mom can roll around, because she was too weak to roll on the carpeting.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, one of the people somewhere gave me wood so I could put it on the floor so she could roll around the condo. But besides the point. But then she had a power chair, and what I did is just remove some doors so she could drive through, and I took out the cabinet so she could drive her power chair up into the sink, and she had a friend to help her get into the shower. She could go to I have to get this a group that it's the Lions Club in near Appleton, and you can get things from them, and they'll build things, or you can just give it to you.
Yeah. The Lions Clubs and other organizations, I think Chad can be helpful in that way.
Yeah, well, there are some resources, certainly, to make a house more accessible. And certainly, if you have income limitations, there are a variety of resources. There's some funding resources in Wisconsin. The name is escaping me at the moment, but we've worked with... with a couple of different agencies that, you know, have helped subsidize some of these alterations.
And one of the things that Steele came up with, Sam, was getting to the sink. And is this something, thinking about the height of normal shelvings and so forth, that can be an issue for people?
Yeah, it definitely can. So typically, what you can do, especially if you're remodeling a kitchen, it's a little bit more difficult to do just specifically for a kitchen sink, still utilizing the adjacent cabinets. But typically, you'd want that sink at about 34 inches, and to be able to maneuver up to the sink. There are manufacturers who make overhanging sinks, but also you need to provide the legroom underneath the sink, whatever type it really is. Typically, that's about 27 inches off the floor, 17 inches deep, and about 30 inches wide. A typical kitchen sink cabinet is 36. So they can definitely be modified. You can keep the doors in place to make sure that, to really keep the aesthetics of the kitchen. So there's a lot of different ways that you can retrofit, but it's really important to really start out forward-thinking with any new design.
Yeah. Steele, thanks again for calling and giving us your experiences. Matt in Verona, your turn now. Hi, Matt. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In 2012, my dad and I found ourselves, our home being overtaken by eminent domain, which turned out to be a blessing because the house that we lived in was very tiny. I'm a quadriplegic with a large power chair, so most of our woodwork was pretty beat up, just moving around that little house. And when we went to go look for a new, you know, to build a new home, it was really a struggle when we talked to builders because a lot of them have their own designs. And when we asked about accessible, you know, universal design, a lot of them were very familiar, but were really reluctant to do many changes without a significant upcharge. And really, what I looked at universal design for myself is you wouldn't. I mean, the house we ended up building, if you came in here, you would never know that a wheelchair user actually lives here. There's very few specific things, but one of the things that I thought that was just crazy is that at least one entrance to the house didn't have a zero grade entry, And the answer that I got back from many of the builders was, we will, you know, we'll put these things into the designs when the people that are coming to us begin asking for it. And I'm like, well, here I am asking for it, and you know, it felt like a chicken and egg thing. And you know, it's like, when is someone going to blink? And whenever I have friends that build homes, I always encourage them to, at the very least, put, I mean, the zero grade entry in the garage, people love it because you're not walking up and down stairs with up a couple stairs with groceries. You're not, you know, and just very minimal things. It's not a huge cost to do some very minimal things that allow a wheelchair user into your house. And as a person with a disability, it's really liberating because often I find myself kind of shut out of their homes in the winter, and I'm stuck in the yard. You know, is the only time I can go in the summer.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, had I heard either of your two guests and this radio show 6 years ago, it might have pointed me in the right direction. But it feels like there's islands out there of information, and it's difficult when the builders themselves don't kind of see the value in it and encourage young, you know, for the most part, people that build new homes and first-time home builders, it's hard to see yourself in your 20s in a wheelchair or to anticipate an accident. Yeah. Or aging parents, you know. So I guess I don't really have a question, but it's more like, how do you encourage kind of the industry to embrace it and see it as a positive, because you're leaving behind a home that is accessible for many generations of people to come.
Yeah. Matt, thank you so much. That was excellent comments from you on your experiences. Chad, you have a comment?
Yeah, well, so that's why we're having this conversation, actually. I know, you know, Sam and I, and there are many other people like us who feel an equal passion for the importance of thinking about these things when we build homes and when we alter and remodel them. And so thanks for calling in.
Is there a... Let me think of this. Now, Sam or Matt had to look around and talk to a bunch of people. As builders, is there in any advertising or, you know, is there some place you can look if you're looking for somebody interested in this? Would a builder say, embrace universal design, or there's some UD sign or stamp or seal on the ads?
I think it is important to check the credentials of your builder. If they are a design build firm, look for any credentials such as UDCP, which is a credential from NARI, through NARI, and CAP, which is a credential through NAHB, the Home Builders Association. I just wanted to just say one thing about that. Universal design needs to be the rule, not the exception, because everyone is exceptional and there are no average people in the world.
There we go. Matt, thank you again so much. I really appreciate your call. I want to give some others a chance to join us. All our lines are filled here, so let's see, who's next in order? Jerry in Rudolph up next. Hi, Jerry. Thanks for calling.
Oh, good morning, Larry and your guests. Thank you again for this program. I have a new construction question. I'm planning on putting LP Smart Side over half-inch foil face polyiso sheathing, and I thought on a previous show that Chad mentioned something about the siding, that LP Smart Side failing over foam sheathing, and I'm wondering, does that include foil faced, or if he has any recommendations or suggestions for me?
Well, that's a great question, Jerry. One issue that we always have to be concerned about when we put foam on the outside of a house is whether or not we're going to be creating a second vapor barrier on that exterior wall, and then whether or not condensation is going to be forming that then will contribute to the failure of that wall. There are general best practices for installation of a siding like that? And my concern would be with having a good drain plane directly behind the siding. But I don't recall a particular, issue that we discussed about what you're planning to do. These are just the sorts of things that you have to be thinking about. There will be water that will get behind any siding. It needs to be able to drain out of that wall. And then we don't want to be creating a double vapor barrier.
Oh, there we go. Thank you so much for calling. Let's turn to Pat in Mozanie next. Hi, Pat.
Hi, thank you. We would like to replace a tub with a shower in our master bath. We're retired, and we would use only a shower, and it just seems like it might be safer for us. Three options I think that we have are like an acrylic surround, a manufactured marble, and a tile with maybe a preformed floor. Any opinions on
those
types of products?
Okay. Sam, you want to take that?
Sure. There's a company called Schluter Systems that make really great systems for creating a shower. Are you thinking about having it zero clearance, so just barrier free?
If that would work, yes.
Yeah, and how old is your house?
Water splashing and that type of thing.
Yeah.
How old is your home?
Pardon?
How old is your home, roughly?
About 28 years.
Okay. Yeah, so one thing to consider is typically a tub is plumbed with a 1.5-inch drain, and a shower requires a 2-inch drain, so that would have to be upgraded. Mm-hmm. Typically, you're going to have to remove the floor, the walls, pull the toilet. So it gets to be a little bit more involved. So that's something to consider.
Yeah, costs you a little bit more to do it that way, but it's a good way to do it. You're saying?
It is. Yes.
Yeah.
Any of these products? I know they sort of each one goes up in price, but any of these products that are better in the long run,
Well, so for any kind of a shower that has a no threshold condition, typically you would do a tile floor and then a tile surround. So that's going to be a little bit more expensive than any kind of a. I don't know of any sort of prefab shower enclosures that you'd be able to use in that situation. So I think if you talk to your builder, a good tiler should be able to make some really great recommendations for you.
Yeah, we have a third on my third floor, which is my daughter's room. She has a walk-in with tile, and it's really quite attractive. And the tiles on the floor are, you're not going to slip and slide around on them either, because they're, I don't know if they're a special tile or whatever, but they certainly grip a lot better than the tub and shower when you're standing in a tub, Chad.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, there are appropriate floor tiles and some that are even better at providing good traction. It is true, though. I mean, we've had a couple of projects, and I don't remember the brand of the product that we ended up installing, but there are some very low threshold, prefabricated bases that can be installed. And they, I want to say they end up creating about an inch high bump right at the base, and then depending on how you detail the floor itself and how flexible the situation is, you can lay that base down into the framing so that it, in effect, you're just kind of dropping down into the tub. And then, but this might not be ideal for a wheelchair or chair access into the shower, but it definitely can serve almost any other need and be, you know, quite accessible.
Yeah.
And Pat, there is one product that just came to mind. It's called a Karsten's shower base, and you can customize that to any size. So it's really handy in a remodeling project. And Chad is totally right. You can, I believe they have about a 1-inch curb.
Yeah. Well, getting in on a wheelchair probably wouldn't be so bad, but might more difficult getting out.
Correct.
Would be the issue there. Yeah. Pat, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We're visiting today with Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison, and Sam Breitenbach, president of TDS Custom Construction in Madison, as we talk with them about home improvement and zeroing in today on universal design. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network as we talk home improvement and universal design and home improvements with our two guests for today, Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build, Sam Breitenbach of TDS Custom Construction in Madison. And there's open lines. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Post on our Facebook page as well. Let's go to Nathan in Walworth County next. Hi, Nathan. Thank you for calling.
Thanks so much, Larry. You always do the greatest shows. I really appreciate that you're here today doing this show.
Thank you.
I wanted to make sure that your listeners know that some veterans can qualify for a housing adaptation grant, and veterans who are enrolled in the VA healthcare system can have durable medical equipment assigned to them, including things like ramps that can be placed so they can get in and out of their home easier. You know, gripping bars for their bathroom, those types of things are all available through VA healthcare for those who need it. And a great place to start for information is at their county veteran service office. All 72 counties here in Wisconsin have a veteran service office, so they should definitely stop in there and see if they're eligible for a grant or for medical equipment.
Oh, thank you so much for calling, Nathan. Our guys are both nodding in agreement with smiles on their faces there. Glad you called in as well with that reminder. Appreciate it very much. Ron in La Crosse has something for us. Let's go there. Ron, hello.
Yes, I have a question. I was thinking about replacing my old cast iron sink, the type, of course, with the faucets mounted through the sink, and replacing it with a sink that doesn't have holes for the faucet, maybe one for the drinking fountain, and then trying to find a wall-mounted faucet. It would be sort of an arrangement that you would see in a commercial kitchen, say in a restaurant. But I just think that the latter design would be more efficient because I could have room on the new sink to put sponges and scrub pads and things. And also, I noticed on my old cast iron sink and faucet, around the faucet mount, that, you know, it gets pretty cruddy and scummy. What I want to know is maybe I should check with the local plumbing code before I have a wall-mounted faucet put in.
Thanks for your call, Ron. Is the sink on an outside wall in your kitchen?
Yes, it is.
So that makes it really pretty difficult to install a faucet on an exterior wall, just for fear of it being a freezing?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of putting insulation, electrical insulative tubing around the pipes.
Yeah. I don't believe you'll find any plumber who's willing to do that and take that liability. For starters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a 2x6 wall, which would be typical of a newer home, I mean, we have occasionally, you know, used a closed cell foam and kept the piping really tight to the inside. But it, you know, it's always a risk, and it's...
Well, like I say, if you put electrical thermal tubing on it, you know, controlled by a thermostat, you know, that would turn on electrical power. If it got below, say, 35 degrees, they say you actually more likely to have a water line, a cold water line, or a hot water line freeze than a cold one. I've heard this before, which is counterintuitive, but, well, that's what one plumber told me.
So an inset electrical heating system could work then, Sam.
It could work. So Ron, is your intention to make it easier to not only put items on the sink, but also to be able to manipulate the faucet and use it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes more room in the new sink. And you also, it's not so much manipulate a faucet. I don't know what you mean by that. But the traditional sink-mounted faucet on my old cast iron sink, I mean, it really gets a lot of crud around that fling, the mount, you know, that the water lines and the valves are mounted on and the faucet arm. And I just, you know, get tired of cleaning it. It looks awful.
Yeah.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I think if you can find a plumber who can install that in the wall, I think it's a good solution.
And then the other thing I was going to recommend is if you are replacing the sink and you can obtain a sink that does not have any holes in it, it is possible to go to a single hole faucet that, you know, won't give you that large plate or multiple penetrations that you then have to clean around, but a very simple, often 2-inch round faucet that rises up out of that sink base, and that'll be easier to clean. And then you've got, you know, a faucet that you might have like a spray nozzle that pulls out of it or something like that. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of nice kitchen faucets out there now that are just a single hole mount. That might help address some of your concerns. And you can have it, if you're drilling the hole, you can do it on the corner or closer to one side so that the bulk of that space at the back of the sink is available for sponges and things like that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point as well. If thinking in terms of universal design when it comes to sinks, is there anything special that might be considered or simply the things that you've been talking about here?
Well, again, I think the height of the sink, typically the kitchen sink will be mounted at 36 inches above the floor. If you're in a chair, 34 inches is much more comfortable for utilizing the sink. Having lever handles on a faucet is really a very good idea. I think also putting as Chad alluded to, having the faucet off to the side of a sink or at the corner brings it closer to the user, which also makes it that much more flexible.
Yeah, you wonder why you don't see that more often. When you brought it up, I thought, yeah, why are they always right in the middle? Just they don't have to be necessarily, but I imagine most of the tub type parts of it that you put in are set up that way, so that's the way they're done.
Yeah, often the most affordable mass-produced sinks are already drilled for, you know, 3 or 4 holes, and then you end up, you know, putting that plate down to hide the holes, even if the faucet doesn't require it, and it's, you know.
Thanks again, Ron. Don in Milwaukee, we turn to you next. Don, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay, my name is Don, actually. I'm a tile installer of many years' experience, and you were talking about requirements for roll-in showers.
Yeah.
Typically, if you're going to do them with a mud-based tile, you do have to move... build them down into the floor by approximately 3 inches. So it does require you to straddle lumber along the existing joist and to support it. And typically the inspectors want some kind of certification on that or to at least look at it. And then you can make it a nice even roll in with a good solid base.
Yeah, there we go. Yep. Comments? You guys look nodding your head in agreement there, Chad.
It's correct. I mean, often you do... If you're going to go to that zero threshold shower and you're not going to build up the entire remainder of the bathroom to be a couple of inches higher than it was when you started, you do end up having to sister the joist under that shower area and make sure that everything is structurally sound and then you know, shave into the joist to make it deeper for proper drainage.
Yeah, so. Makes sense. Thanks.
Yeah, that's definitely not a job for somebody that hasn't done it before. I'm going to tell you. There's a lot of tile jobs the average homeowner can do. That's not one of them because it's tricky to make sure they're sealed properly.
Yeah, the seal.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not a do-it-yourselfer project.
Definitely. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And you can join in, too. A number to call, 800-642-1234. Joyce in Mineral Point, what's on your mind?
Yes, we need to take out our fiberglass tub shower and put in a walk-in shower because of having knee replacements. Now, we can't find any prefab shower base that's 5 foot in length. And so I want to know, is that true? And then we're thinking of putting in a tile floor in the walk-in shower and then having tiles put on the walls of the shower. Instead of making a smaller shower with a smaller base. And is it possible to have a shower door customized because we only have 29 inches between the shower and the vanity?
All right, those are all good questions, and our guests will contemplate those for a few minutes while we take a break for the news. So stay with us on this, Joyce. Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build, Sam Breitenbach, TDS Construction in Madison. Back with us right after the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about remodeling today and zeroed in on a concept called universal design, which is designing your remodel or your new home with thoughts about what happens if you break your leg or what happens if you become pregnant and you need, you know, mobility issues or you are getting older and not moving around as well as you did before. Those are all things that Chad Spate and Sam Breitenbach consider when they're involved in remodeling. Chad owns Chad's Design Build, Madison and Monona guy. Sam is president of TDS Custom Construction in Madison. Great to have them along, and certainly if you have questions, I hope you'll join in. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or phone us at 1-800-642-1234. Tweet us at L. Mueller. Love to hear from you. And we had Joyce on the line from Mineral Point. She's talking about a shower. Sam, you had a question relating to the shower that she was thinking about.
Yeah, hi, Joyce. I'm wondering, are you interested in having the shower curbless?
I'm not sure. Right now, the tub, you know, is just like in a rectangular position. And so we want to get rid of the fiberglass tub shower and put in a walk-in shower. And we can't find a shower base that's 5 foot in length, so I don't know if that's possible. So I don't want to make the shower smaller than 5 foot in length. So is it better to have a tile floor put in and then have tiles along the three sides?
Mm-hmm. So they do. Many manufacturers have 60-inch or 5 foot shower bases that are basically ready to drop in. You have to remember too that the plumber would have to update the drain from a 1.5-inch drain to a 2-inch drain, but there's many different products that you could utilize for that.
Yeah, so that shouldn't be a problem. Or as the alternative, she's talking about tiling. There'd be no reason why you couldn't tile that, would there, Chad?
No, that, you know, with tile, it's much easier to customize. But as Sam said, there are a lot of 5 foot units, and I mean, I think one brand that we seem to see a lot of is Sterling, which is a Kohler brand that has some very attractive modular shower units that have integrated bases that often can have very low thresholds in them. And we've put those into a couple of projects. The other thing that I just wanted to mention is that, you know, we always think of a drain as being a round drain, but in reality, many of these showers that we put in have a linear drain that will often go the entire 4 or 5 feet length of the shower base.
Oh, interesting.
And it can be placed in the middle of that space. It's often put on one of the long edges. If it's possible to drain to the wall, you can do that. Sometimes to save on space and to just make things work, you end up with that drain right under where the door or the curtain would go.
Oh.
You know, there are a lot of ways to play around with those things.
And go ahead.
Joyce, I know you mentioned something about finding a shower door that would fit.
Yeah.
So shower doors are typically custom. You can get stock ones, but there are plenty of vendors out there who will do a custom door.
Yeah.
Right, because we only have 29 inches between the shower, between the tub right now and where our vanity is. So there's not a lot of space there for the door to open up.
Yeah.
So it could be customized. Right.
Yeah.
Right now, the drain for the shower tub is, of course, at the end of the shower or end of the tub. So when we put in the tiles, I really want a tile floor shower and tile around the walls. So we put the. Would you recommend putting the drain for the shower in the middle of the 5-foot space instead of where it is now at the end of the at the end of the tub?
I think that. It would be important to really select the shower receptor first, working with the plumber to make sure that any modifications to the plumbing will be fairly easy to do within the structure of your house.
Yeah. So you need to have the person that you're going to be working with probably on site to talk with that person. From the sound of
correct,
it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Good luck, Joyce. Thank you so much for calling. I wanted to mention, you've got some resources. We before I forget about it, Sam, I know you've got some resources that people can go to for information on this whole business about universal design.
Yeah. Thanks, Larry. So AARP is a really good resource. If you go to their website, you'll find resources for different types of products, different techniques. Also, the Center for Universal Design at North Carolina University is really a great resource. That website is centerforuniversaldesign.org. It's all one word. And then there's a great book called Universal Design for the Home. The author's name is Wendy Jordan, and they have great illustrations, great pictures, sensible checklists for planning your projects.
All right. What was the title of that again? It was
called Universal Design for the Home.
And her name was?
Wendy Jordan.
Wendy Jordan. Okay. Wonderful. And I know... Chad, you were talking about something during our news break that interested me, having to do with grab bars and how you can have grab bars that are quite attractive and you don't even really know they're grab bars.
That's right, Larry. We've found on a growing number of projects that we talk to our clients about the fact that, the soap dishes that are in the shower and or tub and the towel bars in the room, they can all be designed to be grab bars. And I want to take the moment to say that most towel bars are not safe to grab onto if you're falling. They will rip out of the wall or collapse and you'll get hurt. So we ask our clients, would you be interested in looking at towel bars that you can grab onto? And then when they see what some of their options are, they go, yeah, this is beautiful, and I can grab onto it. So that's out there now.
Keep that in the back of your head.
That's right. And there are a variety of manufacturers, and almost anything that gets mounted on the wall can be designed to be helpful.
Oh, so. Excellent. Well, Megan Monona has a question for you. Hi, Meg. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for your great show.
You're welcome.
So it's not super universal design related, but it is about a remodel for a bathroom.
Okay.
In a basement. So I wondered if your guest had any thoughts about we'd love to not dig into the concrete, and we've seen all this information about like ejector pumps for basement bathrooms, and I wondered if your guest had any thoughts about those.
Ejector pumps for basement bathrooms. So this would be something that instead of going, it ejects it up and out of
Yeah. Well, so do you know, Meg, if you're, are there any drains on the floor in your basement? Like, is there a floor drain down there? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, if, because there are sometimes when basements, when the drain, the main soil drain going out of the house actually enter or exits through the wall, and the main waste pipe is above the level of the floor. And when we have a situation like that, there are special sump pumps that can be installed that will essentially deal with the waste and pump it into that system. And that's just part of what the plumber will install when they install your plumbing. There's really no reason typically not to tear up that cement floor and put the bathroom into the floor, connecting it to the pipes that are underneath the floor. That's going to give you the most professional and valuable finished product. It is possible, though not typically in conjunction with the codes, you know, to keep all that stuff above ground and then properly integrate it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's often kind of a do-it-yourselfer thing that we'll encounter where the toilet or the shower has been installed 6 inches above the floor, and there's some kind of, you know, improvised connection to the drains. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go, Meg. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's take another call. Bob in Madison, I think, is next. Bob, hi.
Yeah, I had a lot of disabilities have to do with decreased strength. And I'm wondering what sort of designs we could think about as a function of being able to open doors, like a heavy pocket door, for example, might be really difficult to open. What sort of considerations do we need to keep in mind for strength-related access?
Oh, interesting question.
So, yeah, thanks, Bob, for that question. So, specific to pocket doors, what we like to do is size, first of all, the track for the pocket door really needs to be of a high quality. And they have some that are soft close so that when the door, when you open it up, it actually, it seats itself into its pocket. And then when it's closed, it automatically sort of gradually closes. But more importantly, it's really a great design to have the door itself stick out a little bit into the opening. So you make the opening, let's just say, 38 inches wide, and you use a 36-inch slab in that pocket. What that allows you to do is more readily grab the hardware of that door, making it much easier to close.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Bob, for calling. On to Esther in Token Creek. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hi there. We're in a two-story colonial home that we had built for us in 1976 when we were 27 and 30 years old. And at the time, our older friend said, why do you want a two-story house with all those stairs? Well, even to compound that, we made multi-levels out of the first floor by raising the foyer and having the living room sunk one step down and the kitchen sunk one step down. And then from the kitchen, which flows into the family room, we sunk it down one more step. Now we've got all these steps, and is it possible to make it where we could, at some point, wheelchair it?
Yeah. So that's,
or are we screwed?
That was 27 years ago. And you know what? 27.
We were 27 and 30 then, and now we're 69 and 71.
Okay, so it was about 40 years ago. And 40 years ago, that was probably all the in thing to do, Chad.
It was.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot of crazy things happened in the 70s. It's been my experience.
Lots.
And the 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. But what about this? Can we level this off somehow?
It is. I mean, we've actually done that for one client where we took a sunken room and we you know, essentially leveled it so that they lost that extra headroom by keeping it on the primary level of the home.
And
it's a possibility to do that depending on what the ceiling height is. Often the ceiling is, you know, is constant in those, so it doesn't drop. And it's possible to raise the floor to the level of the rest of the home.
I can see that in a living room. I can, and probably much less expensive than if you're going to do it in your kitchen.
Right. Yes.
Because then you've got all these other cabinets and such that you have to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing, like so many other things, if you're looking to remodel one of these rooms beyond just dealing with the floor, then it's definitely the right time to alter the floors in conjunction with renovating the whole space. But that said, if it is a room that doesn't have a lot of built-in cabinetry or plumbing in it, then it's not necessarily a huge deal. But there are a variety of issues that can come into play. I mean, for example, we looked at one house where the main stairway was coming out of the sunken room. And so we were going to probably have to rebuild the stairs in conjunction with raising the floor. And it was not a simple stairs. It was an elaborate stairway that, you know, you're compounding the cost of dealing with that.
Yeah. Okay, I've got one more question. Just off of our kitchen, we have a laundry room and a 3/4 size bath. But the shower in there is only 30 by 30. And I don't think they even make them anymore. It might even be smaller than that. What can we do? Can we make it larger? Is it possible? And there's really no accessible space between the shower wall and the vanity at the toilet. It's very narrow. It's unlike what's being built now.
And Esther, did you say that the laundry machines are inside?
They're in that room too.
Okay, and are they?
They're on an opposite wall from the shower.
And are they side by side?
They're side by side.
So one thought you might consider is to have a stackable washer and dryer.
I can't have that because I'm too short.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, 30 by 30 shower stall is very, very tight. They do make a 36-inch square shower with a cut edge. It's called a neo-angle shower base. That generally is about all you can really do, but it doesn't sound like you really have enough space unless you move some walls.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate all your comments and suggestions.
Oh, well, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Esther. Let's go to Joe in Nina next. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I need a sump pump that I want to design so it doesn't freeze up in the wintertime. In the wintertime, it discharges out the side of the house and has a 90-degree elbow down into an underground pipe that goes out to the street. Well, a couple of times now, it's frozen up, and I've had to string out fire hose and drain that, and then that hose drains, and I got to replace the hose. Is there any solution to that situation?
That's a great question, Joe. So what we've generally recommended in a situation like that, because it's going to be very hard to keep that underground drain free from freezing, so often with a sump to the outside, once the ground is frozen, if you can just discharge it onto the ground, that tends to be the best solution. So some way to disconnect that current setup for the temperate months and allow the water to just shoot straight out onto the ground in the winter months. And we always recommend, for example, that on sumps that have just a flexible hose, that the hose be removed in the winter for the same reason, because water will freeze in the hose and then it'll, you know, back up or it'll blow out the hose. And you really, I mean, a more expensive option would be to put a heating element into that drain that would essentially keep the water flowing. But, you know, that's more costly to operate. But that might be a way to go if it's problematic to discharge the water at the location.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can always discharge the water out the side of the house as the pipe exits the wall, and it will go on the ground. The problem was I always thought it was too close for the house and the water might seep into the foundation and start to leak on the bottom. So I stopped. I started using that 50-foot fire hose. It's like you say, it freezes up once it goes flat. And right now I just... all I can do is discharge it on the outside so that if the elbow doesn't freeze, that's fine. I usually put a box around that elbow that comes out and goes down, but I also have a valve cover that I could take off and screw the fire hose on, and that's where it's discharging right now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you've got a system there. It would probably cost you a few bucks to change that system from the sound of it, Chad.
Yeah, though it almost sounds like retrofitting it won't be too difficult since you're already switching over to the fire hose. And so maybe it's just a matter of putting a shorter hose on there and so that you're not going to have the issue of the, you know, the water freezing in the hose and getting it far enough away from your home that you feel good about it. But
yeah, and having your slope away from the home a little bit.
Right.
According to more or less what you should have is this, what's the slope that you should have away from a home? It's I forget the percentage.
Well, the grade should be 8 inches lower than the lowest portion of your siding. And from there, I mean, it's really good to have a good half inch per foot, per running foot outside.
I want to, Joe, thank you so much for calling. I wanted to go back. Sam, do you want to give those resources again that you mentioned earlier for people who are interested in universal design?
Sure. So it's AARP, Center for Universal Design at North Carolina University, which is, their website is centerforuniversaldesign.org, and a great book called Universal Design for the Home. The author's name of that book is Wendy Jordan.
And I'll tell you what, this has been a lot of fun talking with you guys again today. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Sam and Chad, thank you so much. We'll look forward to another visit down
Thanks.
The road.
Thank you, Larry. Yeah.
Chad Spade owns Chad's Design Build. He works in Monona and Madison. Sam Breitenbach does the same. He's president of TDS Custom Construction in Madison and one of the companies. Well, actually, they both work in Universal Design. So it's great to have them along. And I'm sure we'll be talking about designing and remodeling down the road with them again. Chad's back on May 10th, as a matter of fact. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Neil DeBole talks prairies. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store.